Every Wednesday at 4, it's time for the ball game.
Shake those sheets. Get on your feet.
No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Oh, my goodness, another assist for Alex Gordon.
Bubba Starling.
You know, I grew up a Royals fan. Just a pretty special time, you know.
Join baseball's best Wednesdays from 4 to 5 on
The Ball Game on ESPN 1510 AM.
For nearly 2 years, the Royal Man Report and Kansas City Baseball Vault have brought you the fan's perspective on Royals baseball. You've joined us for nearly 2 years at kingsofkauffman.com/podcast or royalmanreport.com. Come celebrate at Kelly's Westport Inn on February 23rd, 2013, as we celebrate 2 great years of guests, Royals talk, and analysis with you, our fans. Party starts at 7, free cover before 10. See you there.
Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches.
Take me out.
Hey, ball gamers. February 10th, come join us for a special event to kick off the spring season in style. Come out to Screenland Armor in North Kansas City for a private viewing of the 1989 classic Major League.
How would you like to manage the Indians this year?
I don't know.
We'll have drink specials, a full menu, and even hot dogs and Cracker Jacks. Tickets are only $5, and you can get all the info you need at our website, www.theballgamekc.com.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
So come on out to the Screenland Armor for Major League with the Ball Game, Sunday, February 10th. It would be very, very bad to miss this one.
It's very bad.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my 3 children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one. Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
Kansas City baseball fans eat baseball.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson. I'm joined by Michael Engel and Jeff Herr, but we're going to get right to the phones. We're also joined on the phone tonight by Bob Dutton. You might know him from the Kansas City Star. He's the beat reporter for the Royals. Pretty much, if you don't read his stuff, you're missing a good amount of content that's out there related to the Royals, because nobody's better connected than Mr. Dutton. Bob, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. You guys?
We're doing pretty well. So I'm going to let the guys jump in here in just a second, but we've got a really important question to ask you, and I haven't seen anybody else ask it, and I just don't know what the Royals
Grand
are going to do, because they don't have anybody in right field. So how tired are you of that question?
You know what? There are some people who, like you just did, just asked it and snark, and that's fine, too. But, you know, I can't assume that just because I've answered it, someone else, you know, that everyone's heard that answer. I mean, that's and here's another thing, too. Things change. And I ask the same questions a lot of times, you know, over and over again. So it doesn't bother me as much as maybe some people think it might. I mean, but the answer, at least so far, has not changed. It's Frank Gore. And yes, I think Ho Chamber will likely be in the rotation when the season starts.
Well, that knocks off our second question. But
Going
back to the Frank Gore, though, what I was thinking earlier was, you know, I think it's like a perfect storm for fan angst, because you have Frank Gore, who had a really bad 2012. You know, Will Myers was the minor league player of the year, and they happen to play the same position. So when you get this trade for James Shields, do you think that the angst would be the same if Will Myers was, say, a second baseman or a third baseman, or if he was still at catcher? Or does that just pile onto it because, you know, he was the alternative to Frank Gore?
Well, you know what? I hadn't thought of it from that point of view. But what I had thought of, though, is if they hadn't made the trade, then the question would be, how long can they go with Frank Gore, or how, you know, why are they even looking at Frank Gore? Why isn't Will Myers the guy right now? But to address your question, thinking about it now, I guess it would be a little less if he was a first baseman, say, and you know, like I'm looking at him or Hosmer, if he was you know, a catcher, which he was at one point, and mm-hmm. and we're looking at Perez back there. Yeah, I think there's some merit to that. It probably is more because it's the right fielder, and Francoeur is he's an easy target, but he's a legitimate target too. He had a bad year last year.
It's very true, and you know, 2011 was great, but it's you know, we live in the now, and especially when you're talking about winning now.
You say 2000, you're one of the few people who seems to be, a non-Francoeur guy. I mean, maybe you're not, but who is willing to acknowledge that 2011 wasn't bad, and he seems to get very little credit for what was a pretty good 2011. I mean, and that surprises me somewhat. I mean, the Royals, if he could duplicate what he did in 2011, I think the Royals would take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and I think even if he averaged out, like if you average out his 2011 and 2012, that's pretty much what his career average over 162 games projects to, and that's more than acceptable. But it was just so bad, and you know, in light of everything else, it's just, you know, I think that's why you're getting that question so often, because people are, you know, they look at his 2012 and it looks like it's crazy, and you know, I'm inclined to agree, but that's my opinion, and maybe he's going to turn it around. You know, another guy who struggled last year was Eric Hosmer, and you know, it followed him all year. He started out really unlucky. Earlier, he said this offseason that he's working on kind of getting back to basics. What do you know how much he's been working with the new hitting coaches, and what kind of lessons they're imparting on him? And are there any other distractions going on with him that kind of ran into trouble last year?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I don't know of any injury problem that he had. I mean, when I talked to Eric and I talked to other people around him, the problem seems to have been that he did get off to a bad start last year when he was really hitting in tough luck. I mean, and I can throw these terms with you because you guys know them. I mean, if you look at his BABIP, I mean, it was like an impossibility. He was, you know, there was, you know, that more hits did not fall in. I mean, it was a statistical anomaly. It shouldn't happen. But then he started to come out of the swing, and then he tried to press too much, and then that really put him in a spin. They would get him righted at times. I think Kevin Fletcher got him tracking, you know, in a good way a few times. But then he'd start to get anxious again, and after he'd had a little bit of a good run for a week or so, then he'd try to have one of those weeks where you add 15 points to your average, and the bad habits would come back again. So yeah, I think he just needed to get away. And every scout I talk to, you know, everyone that I talk to around in baseball, say this guy has too much just raw skill and tools to fail. Now, I don't know that he's going to be a perennial all-star type guy at some point, but I think he will be a good player, and I think we'll see that again this year.
Bob, continuing to talk about people who had not good years last year, We talked about Hochaver earlier, and you said that he will be in the rotation before we even ask the question.
If I'm handicapping, I think he's likely at this point. But hey, we're 2 months away from the start of the season. But yeah,
right.
Going into camp, if I had to say, I would say he's the likely guy.
Yeah, and my follow up to that is, what is it about? Why do you think the Royals would lean towards Hochaver versus someone like Bruce Chinn, who, you know, who's had a better last couple of years than Hochaver? Not to mention the fact that if Hochaver is slotted in there at the number five spot, then that's, you know, if we take, you know, if James Shield, Irvin Santana, Jeremy Guthrie, and Wade Davis all start, then that's five right-handed pitchers, starting pitchers in the rotation. So, you know, considering the Royals, if they've always been a team, at least especially recently, they seem to be concerned about the righty-lefty matchups, whether it's pitching or hitting. So why do you think they would – I mean, how okay do you think they would be with a five-man right-handed starting rotation?
Well, I think they're willing to consider that because from everything they've said, because, you know, that leads me to believe that at this moment that Hochaver is the likeliest guy to be that pitcher. Based on merit, it should be Bruce Chinn. I mean, Bruce Chinn – gets very little credit. This is a guy who, since he went into the rotation, and I'm pulling this stuff off the top of my head, I think it was like the end of May 2010 when Mesh got hurt. I think it's like 30, 5-29 or something with an ERA right around 4. I mean, in the American League, I mean, if that's a guy, and that's a guy who could be your fifth starter, I mean, that's not bad at all. I think the Royals believe he could fit better than Hochschaver in the bullpen. The other thing with Hoch, and I guess maybe I haven't done a good enough job in explaining this to the public. The Royals, as an organization, and his teammates are just as exasperated to Hochschaver as the fans seem to be, and he is himself. I mean, what usually comes out are expressions of support, but they don't understand it either. And here's a stat I've been throwing out lately, and I got it from a colleague of mine, Pete Gradoff, who I saw use it for the first time. Hochschaver made 32 starts last year. In half of them, 16. I think this is right. He had an ERA of 2.12. Now that is better than Zach had the year he won the Cy Young. That's a number one starter. Now the other 16, it was over 10, and that's the worst starting pitcher in the history of baseball. I mean, I just look at that, and it's inexplicable. I mean, there's no answers for that. So I think the Royals are saying we're going to make it work. We're going to take another hard look and see if we can get him closer to the first guy. And if there's a potential there, he does have the stuff. He is dominant at times. Why it falls apart, I don't really know that they know. But I think he, you know, the impression I get is that he, you know, he is the likeliest guy to open the season in the rotation. But here's the thing, that they have alternatives. I mean, as you were pointing out, I think he gets – maybe 8 starts, 10 starts, and if he's not producing, maybe even not that many. They'll go to someone else. I mean, they're not, and the same thing with Frank Ford. Frank Ford probably has, six weeks, maybe 2 months, and if he's playing like he did last year, they'll go to someone else. They'll find someone else, whether it's in-house or go out and make a deal. I mean, they're not going to go. Jeff Frank Ford will not get 600 plate appearances playing like he did last year. Blue Coaster will not make 32 starts like he's pitching overall like he did last year. I mean, they will go to alternatives.
That actually kind of is part of my follow-up I was going to ask. And so, obviously, you think the leash is going to be much shorter with Hochschaver this year. Wade Davis is supposed to be the 4 starter. After the All-Star break, you're going to add back in and say that they take, like, the full length and it's a real slow process. July comes, All-Star break comes, we get Duffy and Paulino back. Paulino has a track record of not being real good out of the bullpen in that long relief spot. He's been very good. Well, he's been pretty good, at least, as a starter for the Royals. Is there a chance? Are they so committed to Wade Davis as a starter? Or and I think you kind of answered this in your chat last week, actually, or your Twitter conversation you had last week on the Star website. But is it a chance that both Hochschaver and Davis are out after the All-Star break and Paulino and Duffy are in? Or is it going to take a lot for Davis to get moved out of that 4 spot?
That's a great question, and I don't have a definitive answer. I mean, it's the Royals at this point seem very committed to Wade Davis being their number 4 starter. Now, okay, we'll see. I just have to believe that he's not the same lock as a Guthrie, a Shields, or a Santana. Those three guys, I can't imagine them pitching bad enough or doing poorly enough in spring training not to open the season in the rotation. With the alternatives that the Royals have, I guess I can see Wade Davis having a crummy enough spring that they look for alternatives. That doesn't mean that he goes in the bullpen and stays there and just dies there forever. But if he is dreadful and Bruce Jenn's pitching well or Luis Mendoza's pitching well, I mean, I could see, one of those guys going in. The other thing we all kind of forget, particularly this time of year, guys get hurt. I mean, that's the 5 guys that we're talking about right now being the likely rotation, I think there's a decent chance, just based on the law of averages, that one of them will open the season on the disabled list. I mean, it just happens. I mean, but now, for the first time in a long time, the Royals have legitimate alternatives, guys who have actually done something. And that's not even counting a guy like, Will Smith, who I think a lot has to happen for him to open the season in the big leagues, because I think they're looking at him going back to Omaha.
And, Bob, we've talked a lot about pitching so far, and I think that's obviously the most important concern. That's why they traded Will Myers and tried to go out and get get better in the rotation. But I think something that people kind of are, I don't know if I want to say overlooking, but not giving as much focus to is that, you know, we already talked about Hosmer, and the rest of the offense too needs to pick up and needs to be better, because offensively they weren't a great team last year. Everyone just kind of assumed it's a foregone conclusion. But the guy I want to focus on with this question is Mike Moustakas, who last year coming in, you know, when he came up in 2011, it was his defense might not be good enough to stick at, you know, third base. He might have to get moved to DH at some point, whatever. And then last year he's just lights out over at third base, and, you know, looks like he could be a Gold Glover someday. So, but he really struggled in the second half offensively. Do you look at him and what's he been doing in the offseason as far as what you know and what you've heard, and what's he focusing on, and what did he attribute to his slide, and can he correct it to be the offensive player that really got him his name and got him to where we all thought he could be, that kind of all-star player?
Okay, well, first, your general point is well taken. I mean, I think they finished 12th in the league last year in runs. I mean, if this offense doesn't pick up, all the changes they made in that rotation on you, it's not going to be anywhere near enough to help. I mean, they do have to score more runs. And look, the Royals are invested in a lot of these guys long term. You know, Hosmer, Moustakas, you know, Perez, Escobar, Gordon, Butler. If they're wrong on this group, well, then we're in for another long, you know, for a continuing long stretch of disappointment where things don't go well. Now, I think there's every reason to think a lot of these guys will bounce back. I think Hosmer will bounce back. I think Salvador Perez, you have him for a full year, will produce. I think Lorenzo Cain, assuming he stays healthy, will be an asset in center field. Moustakas now, you know, which I guess sort of the point of your question. He was really good until about late July. Now, I think he's always going to be streaky. He's just that type of, you know, all or nothing pole hitter at times. But his numbers into late July were pretty good. And then he wrenched his knee in Seattle. Now, and this is the type of guy he is. He insists that had nothing to do with it. But you can track what he did up until Seattle and what he did from Seattle to the end of the year, and it was two completely different players. I think from Seattle to the end of the year, he hit under 200 or right around 200. Very little pop. I just think he was not healthy over the last 2.5 months. And so, yeah, I think a healthy Moustakas is much more like the guy we saw in the first half of last season.
Well, we're joined here by Bob Dutton of the Kansas City Star. Bob joined the Star back in 82. He's been on the Royals assignment since 87 with Dick Cagle. Also did some KU and KSU, but he's been grinding out this Royals talk since 2003, doing 162 games a year plus spring training and all that. And he was interviewed a couple years back on a site that I can't find right now. And he had said that he loves what he does, even though it's so much work. We're going to talk a little bit about that here in a little bit, because I can tell you that any one of us three would trade with you in a heartbeat, because you're definitely living our dream doing the Royals baseball. But we're going to get to that in a minute. But today on the Kansas City Star, Bob Dutton's Q&A on the Royals. Like I said, it's on February 5th. Since I won't get this up tonight. You had talked about one of the questions that was asked was to do with the rookies, and then a question almost immediately following that was, will the Royals change their philosophy regarding the platoons of second and right field? And so both of those two questions lead me to what I was going to ask, which is, obviously, Gio and Getz are who's battling for second base. There's been rumor or rumor with some validation that Tejada will get a 40-man spot at least as soon as one opens up, and most likely will be on the 25-man roster. You also are very high in this conversation on friend of the program, Christian Colon, and we love Christian Colon here at the show. He was our first ever interview, and you said that he won't likely get a full-time chance unless Alcides Escobar gets hurt, and then he would be the full-time shortstop over a guy like Flew or Tejada. And as far as the platoons go, it's the Gio and Getz show, but Colon and Tejada will play in some as well. How much do you see Christian Colon playing into the 2013 baseball season? Is he on the roster every day before the 40-man call-ups, or is he just a 40-man call-up without Escobar getting hurt?
Well, I don't. His primary value right now to the organization is he's the alternative shortstop, the guy if Escobar has to go on the disabled list, or if he's going to be gone for a month or an extended period, Falou, Tony Brady before they get rid of him, Tejada at this point, they are below average defensive shortstops. I mean, they believe at this point they could bring Christian Colon up there, put him at short, and he would catch the ball, and they don't know how much he would hit, and I don't think any of us do, but they believe he could handle major league shortstop. I mean, he'd be at least major league average, maybe a pick above. Anyway. So that's his role. I don't think he makes the club as a utility guy. Now, again, it is February 5th. I mean, they haven't even reported yet, so a lot of things could happen between now and the start of the season. But I think they want him in Omaha playing every day. I mean, wherever he is, I think he's going to play regularly. So I don't think he's a real utility man candidate. I think Miguel Tejada comes into the camp as the favorite to be that role. But I think he's got to show something. Now, they scouted him hard in winter ball, and they liked what they saw, so they rolled the dice on the gamble. But I don't think he's a lock to make the club. And I think Irvin Falou is their fallback guy. I mean, he's got options. I mean, he's probably a tick below average almost anywhere you put him defensively, but he doesn't actually kill you. He showed more with the bat last year when he got up than I think most people expected, certainly more than I expected, and I'd seen him every year in camp for several years.
For a while.
I think that's the appeal to him over a Brady because he has options left. So I think he's the first alternative to Tejada if for that utility list. But Colon, I don't think Colon comes up here as a utility guy. I'd be surprised.
Now, another guy, and this wasn't even an option until a couple of hours ago, but the Rays designated Reed Brignac for assignment. Is he somebody that you could see the Royals possibly having some interest as, utility backup defensive kind of guy, in place of Flew? He hasn't hit very well the last couple of years, but defensively he's very strong.
Right. That has just happened, and I would expect the Royals, like most other teams regarding Brignac, to do at least some due diligence. But I'd just be speculating. I mean, I don't have anything inside on that. I mean, but you're right, he has not hit it all the last couple of years. And I don't know what he would cost. I don't know. I mean, I guess he seems to me to be more attractive from a distance rather than close up, or else the Rays don't get rid of him.
Shifting gears a little bit, we talked a little bit about Christian Colon and the possibility of him being called up. Another guy that's gotten a lot of buzz is Yordano Ventura. And, I think every time you bring him up, you've passed on that the Royals are really impressed with him, which they have every right to be. He's a very good prospect. But also that they would be upset if he didn't make it to the big league club at some point in 2013, which, he only made it to Double A last year, which seems like that's really aggressive and kind of a different take on what they usually do with their pitching prospects. Is that indicative of how strongly they think he can be as a starter at the big league level?
I tell you what, their impression of him has grown considerably in the last year. And I don't know, I probably have used the word, whether it's disappointed if he doesn't make it, but the sense I get in talking to the people in the organization is they think it's likely he'll be up at some point this year. In what role, who knows? Probably in the bullpen. But they don't see him as a reliever, despite the diminutive size and everything. They think, this is a guy who could be a number two, maybe even a borderline number one starter. They think once he stops trying to throw every pitch 100 miles an hour, the rest of his repertoire came around, and he has three good pitches. I mean, they think they might have something special in him, and I would expect him, based on hearing that, and assuming he has a good year in the minors. I mean, he could go backwards, but hearing that they would try to get him some major league experience late in the year if they could.
So. We've talked about the Royals, and we're probably going to jump back to some Royals talk here in just a second. We're again with Bob Dutton. We don't want to take too much more of Bob's time. He's been so generous with his time tonight with us. Bob Dutton of the KC Star. You've been on Twitter for a long time as Royals_report, and occasionally I didn't when I first started doing the show, I didn't think of, we were the Royal Man Report back then. I didn't think about how close it was to your name. And actually, a couple of times on the radio, Danny and a couple of the other guys on 610 have slipped and said my show name instead of your handle. So it always got a good laugh out of me. But you used to be just pretty much, you know, this is what's happening with the Royals. It wasn't much conversation. It was just kind of a news feed. And now you're much more conversational. Why did you decide to change that? And have you enjoyed the better interaction with the newspaper readers?
Well, okay, there's a couple answers to that. One, which I probably ought to point out, that we're changing that format a little bit starting today. I mean, we're soliciting the Twitter questions online or on Twitter, and then answering them, you know, online at the paper's website, and then posting a link on the Twitter in case you want to, you know, see all of them. And primarily that came from me because I was getting a bunch of complaints blowing up people's timelines on Twitter. I don't really care that much about this, but I was losing followers every time I would do one of those. so I guess took that as a legitimate reason to look for alternatives to it. Here's the thing. The way that started, though, is people would send me questions, and I'd jump on, think I'd answer one or two just and get out of the way. But by the time I'd answer the second one, you know, there'd be a line of, you know, 25 or 30 questions in there. I'm guessing it's sort of like what players feel when they're signing autographs to some extent, that no matter where you cut, there's always more. I mean, and each time there are. And look, I mean, those are fans, and those are the reasons I have a job. I mean, if people didn't care that much about the Royals, the Star wouldn't be funding a reporter to cover the team. So yeah, well, we're responsible for that. I mean, that's I enjoy that interaction. The thing is, I'm not going to get in arguments or to debate the merits of different decisions with it, because the way I look at that, there are all sorts of outlets. If you want to do that, you can go to other places. I mean, your guys' website, all the different blogs, most of your blogs are written from a point of view and take comments and you go back and forth. And that's great. That's what fans should do too. But I figure that I'm giving the information. I think that's my goal. And then what you guys do with it, make up your own mind, go ahead.
Well, do you have time for three more questions? Because that's all we have, and then we'll...
I've got time with you, however long you want to go.
Okay, well, we don't want to take too much of your time. So we were talking a little bit when I was resetting the interview. We were talking about you've got an awesome job. You're on the road all the time, but other than that, you get to cover baseball in a big, big way, you know, 162 games a year during the regular season. And then you cover spring training too. What is your favorite part of that? Like, is there cities that you especially love going to? Do you prefer spring training over regular season? What is it about your job that you really do enjoy?
Well, I mean, I get paid to go to games. I mean, how great is that? Yeah, I mean, do I love every minute of every day? Well, of course not. I mean, nobody does that with anything with a job. But when I look at what other people are doing, and like I said, whenever I'm thinking things, you know, or lining up, you know, to be difficult or whatever, I just think, you know, I'm getting paid to go to Major League Baseball games. I mean, how jobs don't come any better. So I'm incredibly fortunate. And there really aren't very many traveling beat writers anymore. So it's a very select group and very fortunate to be one of them. I mean, I don't want to trade jobs with anyone. Spring training is the hardest part of our year. It's because it's up early and you go all day and it's late at night and but there is the idea that you're down there playing golf or what, a tennis. But I mean, maybe guys did that at one time. I mean, I pretty much see the condo, the Royals complex, and some place to eat for dinner. So I mean, but that's something I'm complaining. I'm not. I mean, I have the. I don't want to trade jobs with anyone.
Well, that was going to be my next question. So, how good are you at selling books, Bob?
Probably not as good as anyone else.
Bob, we'll take it back to baseball with this question. So let's paint the most wildly positive scenario for the Royals here, that every move they've made just hits, and James Shields is great, and Irvin Santana returns to his 2010-2011 form, and all these Moustakas and Hosmer wake up, and all this happens, and they're in the hunt with the Tigers or the White Sox or whoever come, you know, late July, August, into September. But maybe they need someone to, you know, kind of get them over that hump, or they want to, they need to bring somebody up. Maybe they have an injury or something. Who do you think, if you had to look at, and we'll kind of take Danny Duffy and Felipe Paulino out of the equation here, because who knows what their timetable will be and how effective they'll be when they come back. But if you look at the minor league system, is there one guy that you can really think of that the Royals might say, you know, we already kind of talked about Yordano Ventura, maybe he's that guy, but somebody they bring up and say, you know, kind of like how David Price maybe helped the Rays back in 2008 and kind of bring him up late in the season and get him some major league time and give him that kind of extra juice to really maybe get into the playoffs?
Well, if David Price, I don't know if they have a David Price. Although they would have had David Price if they don't sweep the Tigers at the end of the 2006 season. Yordano Ventura is probably the closest to that now, you know, to being that guy. Kyle Zimmer is on the fast track. I expect that he'll start this season at Wilmington, although that decision won't be made until mid to late March probably. And I guess he could show enough and, you know, in this year that he could get a late season look. I think he is more likely to be a real candidate next year. But if the Royals are in that situation that you're talking about where things are really clicking and they need a piece, I think they'd go out and get a piece. I mean, I think they would, you know, David Glass would open the checkbook and make a short-term investment. I don't mean taking on a guy who's on a four-year deal or something, but a guy who's, you know, on the verge of, you know, maybe becoming a free agent at the end of the year. But I think they'd go out and do that. I mean, if they have a chance to win, I think they would make a push. I mean, they would go out and try to get somebody.
Okay, so then if that was the case, I also kind of had this as a possible question of who might be on the block first. So with Will Myers and Odorizzi and Mike Montgomery gone, do they put somebody like John Lamb out there, or who would they look to trade first to try and get that piece?
Well, I that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, but a lot of times you can pick up someone like that for not a whole lot. Is it somebody who's dependent on to be a free agent? I mean, it doesn't always have to be a blue chip type player. It can be a second level player. And because teams aren't going to give up, generally, they're not going to give up a bunch of stuff for someone who's going to give you a 2-month boost. But at this point, to try to think who that would be, that's speculative. I mean, they don't have anybody who's really that close to the majors. Most of their talent and depth in their minor league system right now is at Class A or below, and so I don't know.
Well, you know, we appreciate you taking the time, Bob, to come on. Again, follow him at Twitter at Royals_review if you've recently unfollowed
report.
Him because he was.
Report.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep, I know I did it. at Royals_report, give him a follow back. He's not gonna chitter chatter quite so much with the fans. He's gonna take it to the paper, which actually is a really smart idea all the way around. I liked how it was done today on the website. It was nice and clean and easy to read, and it makes great for folks like Mike who want to use stuff like that in any to build articles off of or whatever. So, anyways, give him a follow. He's been pretty good about answering questions one way or another, and he's been a great guest for us. So thank you, Bob Dutton. Thanks, Bob, for coming on with us here today.
Okay, guys, we'll have to do it again.
We will. Mm-hmm. Talk to you soon.
All right, see you guys.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to go out to break. And we're going to be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Among the laborers at Royal Stadium is a sheet metal worker who dreams of playing here. This unlikely dream was given wing when Frank White passed a tryout for Ewing Kauffman's new baseball academy.
The Vault.
For nearly 2 years, the Royal Man Report and Kansas City Baseball Vault have brought you the fans' perspective on Royals baseball. You've joined us for nearly 2 years at kingsofkauffman.com/podcast or royalmanreport.com. Come celebrate at Kelly's Westport Inn on February 23rd, 2013, as we celebrate two great years of guests, Royals talk, and analysis with you, our fans. Party starts at 7, free cover before 10. Alrighty, and welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Of course, if you haven't checked it out, check out the ball game 4 to 5 p.m. every Wednesday with our good friend Chris Kamler, the fake Ned. He's a former member of our show. And, you know, it was about a year ago today that he joined the show full-time, Mike. When I was going through some of the stuff today, I found the episode that introduced – or I don't think he was with us full-time, but he had started to show up a little more often, we can say.
Well, we were in the man cave because it was about a year ago this time that we were on Fox 4.
That's when we first moved into the man cave.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We had moved into the man cave. So, yeah. So the team that we have now was complete. So, wow, that's kind of crazy to think it's been that long. but he's doing the show 4 to 5 Wednesdays on 1510. Check it out. Come join us. We really want you to come join us for our birthday. It's 223. It's actually about a month early, but as you all know, I'm not going to be here past March. I'm not going to be in Kansas City. So we've got a lot going on in March. So we're going to celebrate the birthday a little early this year. It's going to be 223 at Kelly's. We're still going to try to do this tradition once I'm gone. I'm still going to try to come back to town every March to celebrate the birthday of our show. And hopefully we'll have a lot more to celebrate in years to come. And then join us on the 10th for at Armor Screenland, which is in the Northland. It confused us a couple weeks ago.
It's not on the plaza or wherever we were trying to send people before.
No, don't go to the wrong movie theater. You want to go to the Northland, to the Armor Screenland. $4 if you buy your tickets early. Say you're coming because of the Kansas City Baseball Vault or because of the ball game, and they get you your tickets for $4. And I'm not sure what time it is.
4 o'clock's when some of the good stuff's happening, and then 5 o'clock's when the movie starts, and we are watching the classic Major League.
Yes, and we're efforting to get another interview with Danny Duffy, our guest from last week. We're trying to bring him back to talk live to the fans that night. And I know that we had talked to, as we call them, the quad pod of Lane Adams, Jason Adam, hopefully Bubba Starling, and Brooks Pounders. And I know the three of the four that are on Twitter are all in, and the fourth one, of course, I think he'll be in if he's down there at that point, because he won't have to necessarily be in Arizona yet. But
they're pretty much all down there already. I know Kelvin Herrera is heading down to Arizona, according to his Twitter. You know, they say that such and such is the first day for voluntary report, but most of the time anymore, they're already down there.
I mean, pitchers and catchers is Monday, but will the outfielder – I mean, our team's pretty good about seeming to be down there pretty early. A couple of them own houses in Arizona and everything, and they kind of expect to spend from February until season open in Arizona. So they'll probably all be down there. So we'll see. A lot of surprises coming. We really won't know until we get there, because that's only 5 days from now. So by the time you're listening to this show, it'll be 4 or 3 or 2 days even. So hopefully you get a chance to listen and get a chance to come out to the show. It should be a lot of fun. Last week we did have Danny Duffy. The week before that we had Rob Nyer. Rob Nyer is now our most listened to episode of all time. We want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to that show. If you haven't already, you can help it pack on some listens and take a listen there. Rob was fantastic. He answered everything we asked him, and he was extremely forthcoming. Danny Duffy's interview was only about 25 minutes, but it was a fantastic short show. It was all we had on that show was that and some outtakes.
The outtakes were fantastic.
Mike and I tried to get the phone call to go through. We screwed up on some times with Danny, so it was on our fault. So, but Danny was last week, and he's, you know, and I don't know, Jeff, if you've had a chance to listen to the show or not, but Mike, what I took away from that is he's just such a real guy. Like, you get players on shows like this, and they give you the same tried and true answers to every question, and you get nowhere. And I really felt like he was coming from the heart. You could hear the pain in his voice at times through some of what he's been dealing with, and I thought it was a real eye-opening interview to the kind of person that Danny Duffy is.
Well, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and you can tell that, you know, but, you know, every now and then he kind of gets into a spat on Twitter about Kobe or his teammates or something like that. And, you know, you can't fake that.
Mike, of course, starts the interview off with a shot on Kobe just for good measure. So
it wasn't a shot. It was just an observation. I think it's great that his team is winning. I don't care about the NBA myself. I just thought it was convenient that the Lakers were winning ball games right at the same time that Danny Duffy was coming back to Twitter.
It's definitely a definitely convenient. Jeff, yeah. Did you have a chance to listen to that show?
I haven't yet. I was telling you guys before I got
Damn
on
it,
there,
Jeff.
It's harder for me to listen now. My job is a little bit more restrictive about listening to things at work, so gotta pay the bills. So
yeah, and if anybody's looking to buy a house in Brookside, hit Jeff up. He's selling one, so that's had his time pretty yeah. filled. So we're gonna be running ads for that before long. Come buy this house in Brookside. Okay, so the MLB.com Top 100 came out. Zimmer, Ventura, and Bubba's on there. Mike, what do you take away from that?
Not really any surprises. They also had Jake Odorizzi and Will Myers were on there, but obviously those two have been traded away. So, you know, it kind of looks like, oh, they only have three in the top 100. But really, the Royals developed four of those and had five in the system, depending on how much development you want to give them credit for on Odorizzi. So, you know, those are the guys you kind of figure on. Ventura has been a fast riser for the last couple of years. Bubba, of course, is probably the toolsiest or one of the toolsiest players in the minor leagues right now. Zimmer is great. I mean, I just like Kyle Zimmer, and I love that he's on the fast track. What Bob was talking about with Zimmer and Ventura, I think it's great that they're going to actually go ahead and put those guys on the fast track. Because you look at what they did with Mike Montgomery. Before 2011, he could have easily been on the major league roster. And they left him in Omaha, and then, you know, I don't know if it was frustration or what, but, you know, he ran into his problems. And, you know, other guys, they brought them up fairly slowly, especially guys, you know, like, you know, Ventura, who was signed as a teenager and has basically been on a high school path to the majors. You know, if they're ready to bring him up now, that's great. I think that's what they ought to be doing. See what these guys can handle and let them kind of let their skills and development determine where they're going to be going rather than some kind of strict regimen of level by level.
You know, I hearken back to when we talked to Jason Parks and we talked about what the Rays do that make them so successful. And part of what I thought was interesting that I hadn't really heard before was how he said how set their schedule was with their pitchers and how they say, you know, here's where you're going to be at this point in your development, so on and so forth. But to your point, Mike, that's almost of all the things that I like about what the Rays have done, that might be one of the things that I could disagree with, because I think to a certain extent, you know, like you tell pitchers, you know, you got to listen to your arm. You know, when our friend of the show, Alan Yeager, that's what he would say, listen to your arm. If it's tired, it's tired, blah, blah, blah. So from an organizational standpoint, I think listening to the pitcher, you know, in the figurative sense, of course, but, you know, if he's putting up the results, if he's zooming through the system, if you're Mike Montgomery and it's before the 2011 season and you're the best pitcher on the staff, who cares if you've only been in AAA for however long or if you haven't even been to AAA, you know? I mean, at some point, you know, you can put them up there and let them see what they have. And there's no shame in you know, if there's a little bit of issue that you might run into of how if it might damage their psyche or something like that. But, I mean, if you take Mike Montgomery and you put him in to start the season in 2011 and he just has a massively awful April, like I'm putting his team on an out-of-the-park game or something.
Yeah.
Maybe. Then you say, you know what, Mike, it's our fault. We put you too early. We're going to send you down to AAA. We're going to let you work this out. And then you're going to come back and be better than ever. You know, I mean, that doesn't seem hard to me. And I got to think that if you're a professional baseball player, you can handle that and you know something like that might happen. But point being, I guess that I agree with what you were saying, Mike. I think that, you know, it's great to see those guys on the fast track. And I hope that the Royals are, you know, taking their time and developing them right. But then I also hope that they're not going to stick to some sort of rigid plan simply because they think that's how it should be. You know, your Donovan Ventura should take X number of years. I mean, you remember when we talked to Bill Fisher on when Baseball Vault was mm-hmm. on 10, and he's, you know, oh, it'll be 4 or 5 years before Jason breaks in. And it's just like, you know, that there's that kind of mentality that you need to get away from of, well, it should take this long, and they have to go this, 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 and this. You know, they don't all have to do that, you know? and some pitchers don't have to. And I
don't know what happened, but we lost somebody.
I think we lost Jeff.
Yeah, I guess I'm.
There you go.
There you go. You're back.
Okay.
I think if Mike gets to typing too much, it jacks up the feed for some reason. So I can.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, and here's the thing, though. Brett Saberhagen made his major league debut a week before his 20th birthday. You know, and that's 1985. It's not like, you know, 1915 where guys are coming off the farm at 17, 18 years old and pitching. You know, that's as recent as in 1984 where they're just bringing these guys up because he was ready. And there's a certain point where you have to say, well, they can handle it or they can't. And if they can handle it, then they're going to succeed. If they can't handle it, then you evaluate from there. I mean, you even look at offensively, Eric Hosmer, you know, finished 2010 in AA, and he spent a month in AAA, and then he was ready, or at least looked ready. Sal Perez, he spent about a week in AAA before circumstances ended up putting him on the major league roster, and he's been there, you know, every step of the way since, other than, you know, being injured last year.
He needed everybody to get out of the way, too. There were so many catchers in Kansas City at that time. There, I think we had two or three at the major league level, plus Pena was at AAA at the time, and all of a sudden the whole Red Sea just split there for Sal Perez.
It all broke apart. Matt Traynor took that shot where he was concussed and was out for pretty much the rest of the year, and they brought up Manny Pena, and then Brian Pena ended up where he went on that paternity leave where he could go down to where his wife was having their child. And, you know, that's, I think it's what, a 4-day period or something. And that's when they brought up Perez, and then they just,
and
kept...
Pena got hurt.
Well, Pena got hurt in spring training, but yeah, but then they left Perez up and sent Pena down.
That's right.
And wasn't that the spring training too, where Jason Kendall, didn't he retire that spring training? Before
yep.
the season even started?
Yeah, so, he had the rotator cuff problem.
Yeah, they were planning on having him back there, and then he retires too. So, I mean, that obviously didn't happen in that same 4-day span, but, you know, it was kind of a nice chain of events that, because, I mean, if that all doesn't happen, is Salvador Perez, maybe this year we're talking about seeing Salvador Perez, you know? So, that's something too, or maybe Perez made the Royals realize, hey, you know what? Sometimes if our hand is forced, that can actually turn out to be a good thing.
Yeah, you just got to go with them.
And since we're on Perez, I'm going to go ahead and skip over letting Jeff try to finish what he was saying, but we're going to go ahead and move on to Sal Perez is on MLB's top 10 right now, MLB Network's top 10. They're doing one for each position. And and I'm sorry, I haven't seen it yet. I don't have cable anymore. So is he 6 or 8, guys?
He was number 6 on – they had 3 different rankings. They had – something they called the Shredder, which is just like statistical analysis of everything. And he came in 6th on that, which is very good. I mean, that's top 10 in all of baseball. And they also, I think Sean Casey labeled him as one of his breakout stars for 2013 in a later episode of just Intentional Talk. And then, like Bill James made a list on this show, and Dave Valley, former catcher with the Mariners, made a list, and they both had Perez kind of on the outside, and a lot of it was just because of the amount of time he's been in the big leagues. You know, missing half the season last year kind of counted against him, but, you know, they conceded that, you know, they definitely see the talent there. And, you know, when you consider that, the premium that's put on that position, and then his contract, I mean, there's no more player that's as indispensable as Sal Perez right now.
There was something said because Danny tweeted about it to do with Sal being 8th defensively, and Danny was just aghast by this. He thought that was way too low for Perez, and Perez is pretty darn good defensively, so there could be some argument for him to be above 8th. But, I mean, 8th out of 30 is still a pretty good standing in Major League catchers when you're talking about a guy that has Perez actually caught or been involved in or been available for 162 games yet?
He's played 115 games in his career.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a pretty good standing for a guy that doesn't even have one full season under his belt. Jeff?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I do think, yeah, you have to take into account the fact that, well, he hasn't played a full season yet, so who knows what actually you know, what he actually may end up having over 162, or catchers usually don't play that many games. But, I mean, I think, and I said it before on this show, and I wasn't exactly breaking new ground, so I'm not trying to take credit for anything, but, you know, we've talked about it. It's absolutely not a wild thought to think that Salvador Perez gets more MVP votes than Eric Hosmer or Mike Moustakas or Alex Gordon or Billy Butler or anybody. I mean, especially if the Royals are looking at fighting for the playoffs or going for a playoff berth this year, one of the reasons is going to be because Salvador Perez is hitting just like he has the last 2 years in his limited time. And if he's playing gold glove defense behind the plate, batting 300, hitting 20, 25 home runs, I mean, you better believe he's going to get quite a few MVP votes.
That's a monster. Kevin Goldstein, the first time we talked to him, that's what he said. You get a catcher who can hit 270, 20 homers, that arm, that's a monster.
You know, Goldstein, to just totally go off track here, Goldstein actually, we love Kevin Goldstein.
We never do that.
And those BP guys, you know, they're a big part of this show and have been for a long time. And, of course, if you've been following what's going on there, Kevin Goldstein was taken from the blogosphere or the writers or however you want to put it and turned into the director of pro scouting for the Astros. Well, he was involved in his first big trade this week, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was a good trade for the Astros. Brought four or five pieces for them to build on. So congratulations to Kevin on having that first big thing. And they had on MLB.com, they had who's the face of the Astros, and Goldstein was getting mad at the Up and In Nation, his podcast Up and In. There's still a group on Facebook that you can join. It's Up and In Podcast, I believe. But he was getting mad because people had voted him up to second. he was ahead of like Roger Clemens and of course Jose Altuve and I think I forget the guy's name, Lethrop or whatever his name is. I think he was still number one, but Kevin Goldstein didn't want the Up and In Nation to push him up because there were a lot of, as he said, there's a lot of other guys in this organization that deserve the credit, and just because people know who I am, I shouldn't be high on this list. So he was a little upset, but it was kind of funny because it was a different side of Kevin trying to blend into what he does, and he's always been, you know, such a big star. So, but back to baseball, or back to our baseball. Actually, no, I'm going to stay off track for just a second. If you haven't heard it yet or you're not a fan, the gentleman that does the voices of our – when we go out to break, when I use them and it says, you know, the vault, or when I'll use the sounders for the old Echo Network that had it says this is Echo Network or whatever. Those are all done by Brad Westmore. He also does the open for this show, the parts that aren't from – you know, when he says the past, the present, the future. That's all Brad Westmore. And you can follow him on Twitter. I think it's @Brad_Westmore. It's either there's an underscore, there's not. I forget. Might not be. But his show is at jackaloperadio.com, JACKALOPERADIO.com. It's the Brad Westmore show. And both Chris Kamler and I were on his last show. And I don't know if it's been posted yet or not. But it's supposed to be Fridays at 8. So I don't remember if we were the last one or this coming one that was on. So check that out, Brad Westmore show. And Brad's a great friend of the program, and he's done a lot for us. And we've tried to have him on and never really seemed to have gotten it aligned, unfortunately. So we'll continue to work on that and hopefully have him on at some point. But now we'll get back to baseball here. And we're about to wrap up, but we got a couple more things. There's a new slogan out. It's called Come to Play. It's kind of meh, you know, not a huge deal, but it is what it is, and it's not our time. And Toby Cook was on Bob Fesco's show to debut it, and I don't know if 610 slipped or not, but the first Come to Play commercial actually was on at like 8 a.m., and Toby wasn't on until about 8:30 to debut it. Huh. So I don't know if that was a mistake or not, but whatever it was what it was. The slogan is Come to Play, and they're taking it kind of from the philosophy that, you know, you can take the kids to the park, they can play in the outfield, the players are coming to the park to play. But the neatest thing that's come out of this, in my opinion, and kudos to Royals marketing for this, is I think it's at about 25th Street off of I-70, I believe. They've got a billboard of James Shields throwing a baseball, and it says come to play. And then on the other side of the interstate, there's one with Sal Perez catching it, but the ball is ripping through the billboard. So they've got this effect where the billboard's actually, like, ripped as the ball rips through to get to Sal's glove. And it's really neat. And I believe the Royals put it up on their Facebook page earlier today so that people wouldn't have to, quote-unquote, rubberneck to see it. But he had mentioned that it was going to be on there, and I was hoping to see it. So I was glad the Royals put the picture up because I don't go into Missouri unless I have to. So I don't even mean it like that, but I figured you would get a
I'll
kick
take
out of
it.
That. So, because I don't care. I lived in Missouri as much as I've lived in Kansas. So, but it was. It's just I don't go to Missouri. I work west of my place in Kansas. So I have no reason to go to Missouri unless I'm going to our great sponsor Kelly's, which is in Westport, which is in Missouri, and I love it. So, sure. Anyway, so Jeff, what do you think of Come to Play?
I mean, it's pretty. Like you said, you did pretty good. Pretty good recap of it. I mean, it's pretty pretty standard baseball fare. I remember they had I can't remember what site it was, like a Deadspin or something. They had, you know, the top 20 worst logo or worst slogans the last 30 years or something, and the Royals had like two or three of them. But most of that was driven because when you have a slogan like Our Time and you go 72-90, that makes you look even worse. So you know, at least this one, like, in any argument, or I'm sorry, any slogan that you have, you could make the argument that it could probably be turned around. But this one, I mean, you could probably say, oh, it looks like the Royals didn't come to play today, or, you know, something. The snark will happen when the Royals Twitterverse, when they lose a game or two or whatever. But ultimately, it's pretty harmless, so they could have done worse, but they also probably could have done better. And actually, I don't even know if they could have done better, because just about any slogan's probably going to catch quite a bit of heat, so who knows.
You know, and before I go to Mike on this, it's kind of funny, because if there are non-Royals fans that listen to the show for some reason, you can hear it in what Jeff just said. He started to say, when the Royals do poorly. It wasn't if the Royals do poorly, it's, if, you know, what happens if this goes bad.
I try to catch myself, but yes.
We are conditioned for almost 30 years to having things go wrong, so it's just the expectation, and we can't help it. Mike?
Come to whatever. It's a slogan. It's like, slogans shouldn't make any difference and whatever. That's my feeling on it.
You know, if they're losing 12 in a row, don't go to the ballpark. Don't come to play. If they're playing 500 or better baseball, get out there, support the team, because for one, it's going to show the powers that be that spending the money is a good idea, because it turns into fans at the park. But if they're playing like crap, you know, nobody's going to come to play. The fans aren't going to be out there, because it's just not worth it. But, you know, I hope it's a good season. I hope that there's a lot to come to play for. So we'll see how that goes. And we talked about this briefly, but Reed Brigniak and Elliot Johnson DFA'd by Tampa. Mike, are they worth picking up?
Well, they're both better than Miguel Tejada, probably. Brigniak, yeah, like I was when we were talking to Bob, I mean, he hasn't hit very well the last 2 years at all. He's been Tony Pena Jr. levels, but he's, you know, only in his mid-20s, and he was always a very highly regarded prospect. You know, and he's somebody who's going to be very good defensively, can play anywhere on the infield. Elliot Johnson's kind of the same. He's more like middle infield, more second base, third base. But I think they're worth it. The biggest problem is finding a 40-man spot. There's only a couple guys that you could really probably go after. You know, if you pick one of them up, you've got to drop somebody. So it'd be somebody like Francisco Bueno or Guillermo Moscoso or Juan Gutierrez or something like that. Some of those guys that really were minor league signings, guys that you don't really figure on being big contributors this year unless a lot of people get hurt. So, I mean, they have a spot if they need it, but, you know, I don't know. I think Brignac's intriguing because, you know, you never know. Prospects can sometimes just turn it on even if they've struggled. So the talent's got to be there. And, you know, if he's only playing, you know, 30 games, if he's only making 10 to 20 starts all year, that's not too bad. You know, you can kind of live with it if he's going to be a good defensive player and, you know, somebody who can spell somebody in case of an injury. So I think they're worth a shot. Are they going to do anything? I don't know if the Royals are going to pick him up or not.
Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, yeah, I mean, it might be a good fallback option, but it's not something that you say this is going to put us over the edge or this is the move the Royals absolutely have to make. And then you think about the fallout of, like Mike was saying, well, they got to make room for him and all that kind of stuff. And would I like to have him over some of the options we have? Yeah, sure. But I don't know if the Royals need to throw cast other people aside or go out of their way to make a bunch of room for these guys. Although they'd be, you know, nice players to have in a pinch, but that would ultimately be all that they really were.
I can't foresee anybody that I want the Royals to pick up at this point. I mean, we've got a good team at this point, and nobody that's going to make this team better is going to come through the waiver wire more than likely, unless somebody just has an idiot attack, I guess. But unless you can put somebody on a minor league contract, I don't see any reason to add anybody else at this point. I think we've got what we're going to have, and I think this is a 500 team. I hope this is an 85 to 90 win team for the next 2 years at least, and I hope that we can figure out a way to keep Shields if he's worth keeping and that everything else continues to work out within the system and what have you. But I think we're going to get out of here. I think we've done about an hour of damage today, and that's all that people really need to handle from us. So there's a lot of lots going on within the podcast. Check out royalspodcast.com. It's a new project between us and Pine Tar Press. We're real excited about it. We're title shows. If you know of other Royals shows and even other baseball shows that would be good for the network, for the royalspodcast.com that we can build with, please let us know. You can send those to royalmanreport@gmail.com. Also, any questions, comments you have, anything you like, don't like, guests you want to see, royalmanreport@gmail.com. We'll find that. And on that note, Mike, you got anything else going on?
Well, we're recording this on February 5th, which is 30 years to the date of the Cecil Fielder trade. So the Royals traded Cecil Fielder to the Blue Jays for Leon Roberts 30 years ago. I only mention that because I wrote a big thing up on Kings of Kauffman about it and spent about 3 hours digging through sporting news archives to get the information. So I want people to go read it.
So, see, even before we were cellar dwellers, we made bad trades. So, and every team does.
Well, you know, he didn't play in the majors with any reason until 1990. So, you know.
Maybe Cecil Fielder would have spent his whole career here and been awesome, and then we could have had Prince Fielder instead of Detroit. But I don't really care for Prince Fielder that much. It is what it is. Jeff, anything else you got?
Nope, nothing. Go read my stuff at 610, I guess. But other than that, nothing too crazy going on for me.
Jeff's working on getting Echo Network going again. So if you're interested in becoming a writer for anything, not just sports, but anything Kansas City and beyond, shoot a message to at the Jeff Report. And
actually, Troy, now that you mention it, for anybody that listens to this podcast and is also a fan of anything geeky and or nerdy, movies, comic books, TV, whatever. I'm actually going to be starting a new podcast this week with Brandon Nichols, PSA Prez on Twitter. We've kind of struck up a friendship on Twitter talking about the nerdy stuff we both like. So if anybody's into that stuff, we're going to talk about books, movies, video games, comic books, whatever. So if anybody's listening to that, is into it, then hit me up on Twitter, and it'll actually be the PSC podcast is what we're calling it. So I'll tweet it out, and we'll have a website and everything. So that should be fun. So if anybody's interested, there will be that.
And, of course, echonetwork.com, kingsofkauffman.com. We're all over the place at this point. And maybe if you send a small sample of your writing, if you like to write about the Royals, if you send a small sample to Mike at, you can get him at Michael Engel on Twitter, send him a DM, and I'm sure he'll get you an email address, and maybe he'll look at your stuff because he might be in the mood to add a writer or two here before too long. So we'll call that a soft release, Mike. That way you're not getting totally spammed the way you do. And we'll get it from our listeners first, and then you can hit Twitter and have the 400 replies you get. Until next week. Yeah, we're not sure who our guest is going to be next week. I've got, of course, we're going to have Jay Jaffe at some point. We might have him next week. Otherwise, we do have feelers out for JJ Piccolo again, who joined us last year, and Rex Hudler, and I would love to have Rex on. I really think he he does a good interview, and he's a good person. If, even if you don't like what he does with the Royals, I think you'll change your opinion a little bit if you listen to him. And so, but until next week, for Michael Engel and Jeff Herr, I'm Troy Olson, and thank you to Bob Dutton and the KC Star. Until next week, go Royals.
Yo.
Hey. Okay.
Is there a hamster running around the microphone?
No, that was me moving the mic.
Can't have nice things. And then he's going to run in and call Bob and get him added, but they're working on selling a car, so he's like waiting outside for people, which is totally normal.
Yeah. Let's hope he comes back.
Yeah, right, yeah. And never refer to it that way. And you still access it, at least I do. I just hit D and it automatically goes to docs.google. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
There's no difference in what I'm doing, so.
Yeah, I don't know why they decided to switch it. I mean, documents make sense.
Yeah.
It's not like.
It's not like the cloud. Well, I mean, it is, I guess, but I don't use it that way.
But it's called, like, Microsoft Office for a reason, you know?
Uh-huh.
That people use it in an office setting, typically. I'm not using Google while I drive, at least I shouldn't be.
Okay, so I guess we had a full house. It was going to be the Engel Show, but I guess not now. Sure.